south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, starting with this email from Doug, who, with his wife, is in the process of getting Guatemala residency, going through the steps right now. Now, pay attention to the punchline. It's a good one. He says, "Hey, Johnny, good morning. Hope all is well. I know I haven't written for a while, but I wanted to give a chance to let all the Daves write in first. A few weeks back," he says, "my wife received a call, and we went to the Guatemala consulate the next day, and she actually got her DPI, her residency." All right, me, Johnny here. That's what they call the little card you get when you finally get your residency, a DPI. It stands for personal identification document, but you know how in Spanish they flip the verb and the noun. So in Spanish, it would be documento personal identificación, or document personal identification, thus DPI. By the way, when you come across any official abbreviations for anything in Spanish, they'll often be the exact reverse of the same abbreviations in English. For example, if you go to a laboratory in Latin America and get an HIV test, they'll do one on you, you know, when you're going for your residency. Well, when you look at the printout of the results, it'll say VIH, VIH test, because, like I said, most often they'll flip the verb and the noun. Oh, and that's how you can tell if a gringo or expat really knows his Spanish like a native. He, she, or it will know those subtleties. In a conversation, that person will know exactly which verbs and nouns to flip and which ones not to. Because, you see, it's not an absolute rule. I'd say about 90 to 95% of the time you'll flip the verb and the noun, and the other 5% of the time, no. And only native speakers and gringos and expats who really know their shit will get it right every time. Take the phrase, big deal. In Spanish, you'd say, gran trato. That's what Spanish-speaking gringos and expats would say. But a native Spanish speaker would flip it and say, trato grande. Or in English, deal big, which doesn't make sense at all, right? Not to us gringos, but to native Spanish speakers, of course, por supuesto. Anyway, as mentioned, you don't flip the verb and the noun 100% of the time, maybe 90, 95% of the time. And you don't learn all that by taking Spanish in high school or college. Those are the little details you pick up along the way when you've engaged in lots and lots of conversational Spanish with native speakers. Believe me, it don't come easy. Look at me, I've been down here a couple of decades now, and I still screw up the placement of nouns and verbs with regularity. But back to the email. Anyway, Doug says, "Johnny, I'll give you another update on the residency process with the wife and I in a few weeks when we return to Guatemala to register our marriage. I find it's cheaper to keep her now after 28 years plus," he says. He says, "I'll be sure to let you and your listeners know if there are any hang-ups in the process." Then Doug says, "Johnny, my wife finally sees the importance and the benefits of retiring in Guatemala. You see, her 85-year-old parents are now living with us due to recent medical and quality of life issues. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. Unfortunately, they retired late and missed the good years of being able to travel and do things. And now they can only sit around on the couch and watch TV." He says, "Living the good life for them is just not affordable anymore. With the recent rounds of inflation in the States, it's become so expensive. And finally, now, even my wife recognizes that if they were living in Guatemala, they could afford to pay for the home health care they need, from meals to house cleaning to bathing, all the extra assistance they might want or need. That stuff's just not affordable for them because, you see, they retired from their jobs in their late 70s, and now they can't get around, though they try. My wife is realizing and seeing this too, that the life her parents have now is precarious on the amount of retirement income they're on. On top of that, at their late retirement age, my wife is seeing how much they missed out on. And it's something that my wife and I do not want to happen to us." He says, "Case in point and reason gazillion on why we are working on getting the hell out of Dodge. You see, the other day, I was waiting for the plumber to arrive. I used that time to go out for a while to get a bite to eat for the wife and I. It was just a sandwich and two drinks. Cost $40. Nothing fancy at all. $40. Johnny, he says, for that amount of money, the wife and I could have had a nice steak dinner at a fancy restaurant in Guatemala City or Antigua. Like I said, that's reason number gazillion for me and the wife to get the hell out of Dodge. That said, Johnny, I'll close here with more proof that the U.S. is a dying country. Who could have predicted it would get this bad? He says, I'm enclosing a link to a sad article about a store chain in the U.S. that thinks it's outwitting thieves when in reality, it's the customers who are getting screwed. And they take it. They accept it. Stupid stuff like this is happening in the U.S. and on steroids. Be sure to have a look at this link, Johnny. Take care. Signed, Doug. I'll be out of Dodge by sundown. All right. Thanks for that, Doug. So you'll be getting out of Dodge by sundown, huh? Or else. And I'm clicking on the link you sent me, and the title of the article says, Washington, D.C. store shows pictures of toilet paper products on the shelves, pictures instead of the real products. So I guess when you go to the cash register with your empty cart, you show him, her, or it pictures of the item or items on the shelf, and they retrieve it for you. All those weird changes because of the massive increase in store theft. Shoplifting is certainly catching on. It's becoming trendy. Is that the world you want to live in? Well, you're living in it. And I'm seeing photos of the store shelves with no products on them, just pictures of products and their barcodes. Wow, man, when I see this stuff happening up in the States by you, I keep thinking if you tried to pull that off in a store here in Latin America, you'd get your ass whooped. There's no such thing as a let them go, hands-off policy here in Latin America. Funny thing, too, the other day I was talking to my brother about this. Now, my brother, as a kid, used to shoplift once in a while. From all accounts, he was pretty good at it. Him and his buddy were a tag team. His buddy got caught a couple times, but my brother was stealthy enough that he never did. Later on, well into his 30s, he fessed up, though he never mentioned it in front of my mother or she'd have had a heart attack. He used to steal from places. Sears, Jewel T, Kohl's, A&P, Monkey Ward's. He had a code of ethics, though. He'd never steal from an individual, only a corporation. Thankfully, he got over it. He grew out of it. But he did have an interesting comment when we were discussing it the other day. He said, back in my day, he said, shoplifting used to be an art. You had to figure ways to hide it on your body somehow or in your clothes. And get this, he told me he always had a plan B. Now, where have we heard that before? Anyway, he said thieving in the old days was different. You had to plan those things. It was a real stealthy operation. But these days, now that it's a no-brainer and you can steal, what, up to $900 worth in some districts? You just roll in with a shopping cart, fill it up, and roll right out. That, my brother said, takes all the fun out of it. What's the fun in that? He said part of the shoplifting experience way back when was all about the rush, the dare, a guaranteed hit of adrenaline. And I said, well, you know, down here in Latin America, I was talking to him on the phone. He's up in Chicago. If you want to get back that feeling of the rush, the dare, the adrenaline, try stealing something in a supermarket or a mall down here, you know? They're loaded with cameras now, too. You get caught, you pay the piper. Once again, three cheers for Latin American lag time. In other words, down here, there'll be no pictures of toilet paper on store shelves anytime soon. Oh, and related to the part of Doug's email when he's talking about his wife's 70-something, not-so-mobile, over-the-hill in-laws, unable to enjoy their retirement years, the so-called autumn of their lives, because they need assistance and help now and again, and they just can't afford it. Well, you longtime listeners have heard me speak on that subject many times. Why, it's infinitely better to be down here in Latin America if you're old, decrepit, and just can't get around much anymore. I've mentioned many times before that even if all you're living on is a measly $1,500 a month Social Security check, you'll still have two-thirds of that dough left after paying for a 24/7 assisted living person. In other words, for just $500 a month, you could have your own live-in nurse slash maid. Just the thought of having a live-in nurse slash maid would be inconceivable if you're living up in the States and making under, let's say, $200,000 a year. I looked up the stats. Only the top 2 to 3% of Americans can afford a live-in maid or a live-in nurse 24/7. Think of it. If you were in your 70s or 80s, stuck at home in a wheelchair or stuck with a walker, immobile, not being able to get out much at all, It would cost $60,000 to $100,000 a year to have a 24/7 live-in nurse or nurse's aide. Whereas down here in Latin America, I guarantee you could find a registered nurse, LPN, or nurse's aide. She'll even do the shopping, the cooking, and the cleaning for about $400 to $600 a month. I'm talking about off the gringo tourist trail, that is. On the tourist trail, however, like Costa Rica, Cancun, and the tourist areas in Mexico, probably double that. The thing is, I've been talking about this for years, but very few people actually do it. Everyone thinks it's a great deal for their parents and grandparents stuck in nursing homes up in the States, but they never pull the trigger. Or maybe they just don't believe it or are not taking it seriously. They think it's hyperbole. I even talk about it a bit at my Expat Insider seminars, give examples, break down the numbers, the cost, talk about how to find or recruit your very own dependable, honest, full-time nurse or nurse's aide. But still, even after all these years and all the time I've spent talking about it, I don't know of a single gringo expat living down here who's had the foresight to yank his parents or grandparents out of a nursing home up in the States and bring them on down. Meanwhile, I know plenty of gringos and expats down here who tell me their parents are up in a smelly old vomitous nursing home up in the States. The residents sitting around zombified, all drugged up, watching TV, sucking on Jell-O, and waiting to die. And on average, those nursing homes up in the States have one nurse for every 10 or 15 residents. Talk about personalized care, huh? Oh, and did I mention the average nursing home caregiver in the States is around 300 pounds, a clock watcher who hates her job and spends most of her time on her cell phone? That's the profile of your average state-sponsored nursing home caregiver. Go ahead, tell me I'm wrong. I don't know about you, but I'll tell you how I want to go out of this world, at least, let's say, the last couple of years of my life. I want to be in my own house or apartment with a little garden or green space outside, and I want to have a live-in nurse or nurse's aide 24/7. I want all that, and I don't want to run out of money in a year. Well, guess what? The only place I know where that little miracle can happen, if you need occasional help and you're not in great physical condition, is if you live down here in Latin America. But still, after years of talking about it and laying out all the proof, people just aren't jumping on board. That's all right, though. You've been informed. I've done my duty. My conscience is clear, though you'd think there'd be a mad rush of old-timers up in the States beating a path south of the border. But it just ain't happening. Oh, they're coming down all right, but not for the specific purpose of living out those last few years in the hands of a nurse or caregiver. On that note, man, do I have a boots-on-the-ground story for you. You just heard me say why I'm amazed that old folks, especially immobile old folks, aren't rushing down here and taking advantage of the fact they could have a live-in nurse or caregiver 24/7 for around $400 to $600 a month. When I tell people that, their eyes kind of glaze over. It just doesn't sink in, or they change the subject. End of conversation. Anyway, on that same theme, the other day, I saw something rather agonizing. Though, in the end, there was kind of a happy ending. Kinda. Turns out, last week, I happened to be in a small town out in the boonies. You know, every small town has its central park. And on weekends, starting usually Friday afternoon, people start aggregating. Because, you know, everybody lives for the weekend, right? And though central parks here in Latin America are pretty sparse during the week, a lot of times on the weekend, they get pretty crowded. So anyway, I'm in this small town central park. Seemed to me I was the only gringo there. That's usually the case when you're way out in the boonies. I see this guy in a souped-up wheelchair. You know, one of those high-tech wheelchairs, motors and batteries and all that? Joystick control, stealthy-looking. He was rounding the corner, kind of working his way across that central park, going down the main road, a sidewalk, really, going towards the central fountain. By the way, almost all central parks in Latin America have a central fountain. Working or not? Usually not. He was slowly but surely working his way right towards me. First thing I noticed from like a block away, he was a gringo, blonde-haired guy. A little on the chunky side, though not fat. Dressed all in black, just like his stealthy wheelchair, totally black. Which is usually the fat guy wardrobe of choice. Black. Young, too, I figured, in his 30s. Poor guy, I thought, so young. Stuck in a high-tech wheelchair. And I noticed he had someone with him, a young lady. Sometimes they'd stop and talk a bit, look like they were arguing. She'd push him a while. Then it seemed they'd argue a bit more, and he'd take off by himself, and she'd be 5 or 10 paces behind him. Sometimes she'd push him, sometimes he'd be on his own, doing the joystick thing. And as he or they got closer, I noticed he wasn't a quadriplegic. He was a paraplegic because he had full use of his arms, it seemed. But I also noted he was certainly in pretty bad shape because as he got closer, I saw he had one of those tubes running down the side to a urine bag. You can't unsee that picture or disentangle that thought. Man, I was thinking that's the kind of life you never want to have. Is that a life? Well, I guess you can get used to anything, but at 30-something? He stopped about 10 feet from me. Saw I was a gringo, his eyes lit up, and he came right on over, with the young lady tagging along with him, but some paces behind, walking up later. She was on her phone. Surprise, surprise. Now, before he or her said a single word to me, I figured right, thinking he was maybe 35 to 38 years old. And the girl, maybe 24, 25, an absolute stunner, a 10, a beauty contest winner anywhere in the world, really. Curvy as they come, but not wearing anything super tight as to not garner too much attention. Here's the thing. When you're down in Latin America, especially off the gringo tourist trail, when you spot another gringo, it's like old home week. Well, not for me, but for most other gringos and expats. As for me, I'm immune to it. In fact, sometimes I get annoyed when unknown gringos walk up to me and start talking like they're my best friend. There was a time, though, way back when, there really was a huge shortage of gringos down here, and when you saw one, you really did want to talk to them like old home week. Of course, I'm referring to being off the gringo tourist trail. On the trail, there's never a shortage of gringos. Anyway, normally, when you're off the tourist trail and don't see other gringos much, it's common to greet each other as if you were from the same town or the same high school. Even though you most likely lived 1,000 miles away from each other, it's sort of a fellow gringo traveler bonding thing. In other words, gringos, especially off the trail, will talk to other gringos they meet, super friendly and cordial in a way they'd never talk to a stranger in their own hometown. Sounds strange, but it happens all the time. By the way, the first couple of years I was down, I used to be one of those. Especially way back when, before cell phones and the internet. I'm talking way back in the age of the $2 a minute phone call. Yeah, that's what it was like when I first came down. Talking to your buddies or your mom and family back in the States, $2 a minute. Cost you a fortune just to say hi or happy birthday. Normally, to get a good connection, you'd have to go down to the phone company office where they'd have a row of telephone booths and you'd book your time there, pay in advance. But that's ancient history. Anyway, after the usual how you do's and what you doing down here crap, that gringo in the wheelchair and his lady friend were at it again. It didn't take long, and she said something in broken English to him, and he laid into her. I could tell the guy was just plain irritable. I guess you couldn't blame him either. I mean, he's stuck in a wheelchair, pissing in a bag, 30-something years old, f***ed up for life, and he had a good long life ahead of him. Nothing but downhill from here, too. Nothing to look forward to. Unless maybe Elon came through with his neural chip, you know. He says the first people it'll help is quads and paraplegics, you know. So anyway, while they were arguing, like I said, they got into another spat. She was calm enough, didn't raise her voice, but he was quite edgy. Again, just plain irritable. And I thought to myself, I know exactly what's going on here. I've seen this before. You know how sometimes you're sitting at an outdoor cafe, people are walking by and you play, let me guess. Sort of try to guess what a person's life's all about by their mannerisms, their clothes, the way they walk. Yeah, kind of play detective, see who comes up with the best story. Anyway, I'm thinking this guy had some kind of nasty accident, probably with a drunken driver. Maybe he was the drunken driver. He's a paraplegic now, forever. And now that he's recovered as much as he could, he's got enough dough, maybe from a settlement, whatever, to hire a caregiver 24/7 to accompany him on trips and journeys around the world or whatever. But this guy knows something that the average paraplegic or handicapped person up in the States does not know. That if you come down to Latin America looking for a caregiver 24/7, it doesn't have to be a nurse who's an old bag or a grumpy old male nurse Neanderthal type with a crooked smile. Just go down to any big hospital or nursing school, put a notice in Spanish, of course, on the bulletin board, explaining you're a gringo with a certain situation. You're looking for a girl 24/7, a caregiver, who doesn't mind traveling and living a first world life. Well, in no time, you'll be absolutely deluged with applicants. And I imagine this guy did exactly that. And he just happened to narrow the field down to a person that looked like Miss Argentina. So that was my conclusion, playing that little game, let me guess, in my mind. Oh, and I also have a feeling this guy never goes back to the States. He lives somewhere in Mexico, Argentina, Guatemala, somewhere. Maybe even Europe, because up in the States, if he brought that girl back pushing his wheelchair around, tongues would be flapping incessantly. Rumors would fly that they're an item. Maybe she's his wife. You know the drill. She's only with him for his money. What an odd couple, the Beauty and the Beast and all that. You know how people talk. Anyway, they pulled up to my bench. He's sitting there in his wheelchair, and she sat down on the edge of my bench. I could tell this guy was in some discomfort. He had little beads of sweat on his forehead, trying his best to converse with me in an upbeat fashion, but you know what they say, familiarity breeds contempt. And I was a new guy he just met. That girl, even if she was a 10, I could tell every time he spoke to her, he had an edge in his voice. I thought she must really like her job to take that kind of verbal abuse. Or maybe it was just a bad day, and he was out of sorts. Anyway, we sat there for a while, and I finally got the whole story out of him, or pretty much the whole story. I was right with certain parts of my guessing game. Was an accident with a drunken driver, all right. Though he didn't tell me if he was the drunk or it was the other guy. I didn't want to pry. But I kind of got the feeling it was him. So then how did he end up in Latin America with a beauty queen nurse pushing him around everywhere? Well, that's where the story took another turn. He told me he'd been to university. I think it was Michigan State. He got a degree in international relations with a minor in Spanish. Because, you know, with international relations, you just might be dealing with international types of people, huh? So learning Spanish had its advantages. And he confirmed the fact. He told me that he did, in the first year, hire a nurse to take care of him 24/7. And it cost him almost $100,000 that first year. He said, no way could I keep up with that. In a few years, I'd be broke, he said, and they'd stick me in a state-run facility. He said he'd off himself before he'd let that happen. At $100,000 a year for a permanent caregiver in the States, man, if he lives 10, 20, or 30 years more, we're talking millions. So then the question is, how did he end up with this Latina bombshell nurse? He said the first year he just sat at home with his grumpy American middle-aged nurse. He sat around depressed, watching TV, getting fat. Though lots of physical therapy too, so at least he'd get out of the house two or three times a week. He said those physical therapy sessions at the hospital were his salvation. Because when you're in physical therapy, you run into the same patients over and over again. And there was this one guy, he said, a naturalized American born in Colombia, also in a recent car accident and permanently in a wheelchair. And when that guy's physical therapy was over, he said he was moving down to Bogota, Colombia, where his sister lived. She'd already set him up with a permanent live-in nurse. And when the Colombian guy showed him a picture of his new nurse and told him the salary he was going to pay her monthly, well, long story short, the blonde-haired paraplegic gringo said, can you hook me up? I can speak Spanish. Well, he did. He hooked him up to a nursing school website in Bogota, Colombia, did some Zoom interviews with the candidates, flew down to Colombia with his brother helping out. He hired one of those fresh young nurses, and now she's been with him 3 years now. And these days, he's living with her in a nice residential tower in Bogota, Colombia. And they travel a lot, most exclusively in Latin America and Europe. He said they've taken a few cruises, too. By the way, he said he'll never take her back to the United States, and she's okay with that. And I said, I bet I know why. Every American swinging dick will try to hit on her. He said, man, you got that right. Then he said, I know what you're thinking. He looked down at his own crotch, shook his head and said with some sadness, out of commission, dead in the water. I thought, no wonder the guy's so irritable. He's living with a girl 24/7, a girl that does everything for him. On top of that, she's no ordinary looker. She's a beauty queen. And there's absolutely nothing he can do about it. No wonder the guy spits venom. Oh, and that night we went out to dinner, the restaurant in his hotel. We're sitting there, you know, speaking in English and once in a while in Spanish so she can understand. By the way, my Spanish isn't that great, but it's much better than his. And his was by the book at university. Anyway, he said, we've been together a couple of years now, and we get into our spats. You saw me being mean to her in the park. Then he looked right at her and said in English, believe me, she's no pushover. She gives as good as she gets. Only she's a nicer, classier person than me. She won't scratch my eyes out in public, even when I deserve it. And in the end, I said to him, you know, in a way, even with all the bad shit that's happened to you, you're a pretty lucky guy. Could be worse, which I guess was the wrong thing to say, because he came back with, what would you do if you couldn't walk, you peed through a tube, you couldn't wipe yourself, and your dick didn't work? He said, you could do what I did my first year, sit in a room, waste away, feel sorry for yourself, and think of ways to off yourself. Or you could go down to Latin America, hire a beautiful nurse, and make sure she has all the perks of a first world person. You can either die on the vine or make the best of a bad situation. Who knows, she might even learn to like you. The other half of the deal is she'll have to put up with my complaining, my moods, and the times when I'm an irritable jerk. So there they were, both locked into a relationship, an agreement. It seemed to me kind of rocky, not so smooth. His fault, not hers. Though their agreement held out 3 years already, so it seemed to be working. Of course, you never really know what she's thinking. Young, beautiful girl like her. In due course, she'll be longing for the usual things. Husband, kids, family, and all that. But I dare not bring that up. I'm thinking maybe that's part of the reason why he's so irritable. Knowing he can't fulfill those roles. Not really. And even though he mentioned none of that, I know it was on his mind, because when she left the table at the restaurant to go to the restroom, he said, you know, the first couple of months I made her wear her uniform, a white nurse's uniform, when we'd go out on the town, restaurants and stuff, because guys would hit on her. Whereas a lady, a professional nurse in uniform, not so much. Now, if you ask me my take on their relationship, it looked like kind of a brother-sister kind of thing. You know, a little friction, a little antagonism, with that touch of sisterly love and respect, too. Now, you can call me a jerk, you can call me a dick, but I don't think any lady, hot or not, could put up with this guy for too long. He's just too irritable. And in front of me, he was trying his best not to be. So I can imagine what goes on behind closed doors. And remember, for the nurse, it's a 24/7 job. However, I have to say, if I was ever in the same position as that guy, I'd do it the exact same way. Especially when the alternative is living in a horrible, depressing nursing home, spaced out on downers, sucking on Jell-O and smelling like vomit. All right, closing on a high note. Have you ever heard the Latin American fisherman story? Goes like this. A rich American goes down to Latin America, deep sea fishing. Sitting on the dock, he sees a poor fisherman in a beat-up boat. The American says to the guy, why are you packing up? It's only 10 in the morning. The Latino said, I'm going home. I've got enough fish. I'm going to spend the rest of the day hanging with my family. The American says, well, why don't you fish all day? Catch more. The Latino says, why? The American says, then you could sell the fish at the market and earn some extra money. Maybe buy a bigger and better boat. The Latino says, why? The American says, then you can expand your business, maybe hire the relatives, earn more money, buy a warehouse, and have your own production facility. The Latino says, why? Then the American says, well, in time then, you'll be so rich, you could set your own hours. You could get up in the morning, fish a few hours, and spend the rest of the day just hanging with your family.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.